the daily racing podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hi there, welcome along to William Hill's Racing Podcast. My name is Alex Dunn, and in the company of Sean Quinn, we're going to be looking ahead to some of Thursday's racing at Doncaster. It's a St. Ledger meet, it kicks off on Wednesday, and we're going to be looking ahead to some of the second day's action. We've got Mick Norton, Chris Pimlott and Ollie Pimlott in the studio on Thursday the 12th of September. Sean Quinn pulls a face at me. Mick will have his hands full there, won't he?
Brave scheduling, I say there. My goodness. We must be short in William Hill Towers. All feeling very, very brave. Not one Pimlott, but two.
Crikey.
In the same studio.
I'm off tomorrow, but I might listen in.
And then Mick has to adjudicate.
Mick will have to referee the two Pimlotts, yeah. Anyway, there on air at 1:30, Doncaster, Epsom, Chepstow, Wolverhampton.
Promises to be a good show.
It should be. There should be fireworks, Sean. Put it that
indeed.
Way.
Indeed.
How are you anyway?
Yeah, very well, thanks, Alex. Very well.
As I mentioned, we're going to look ahead to some of Thursday's action at Doncaster. We're just going to kick things off by talking about racing on Good Friday. It's a topic that's been, pretty hotly discussed of late. I'd imagine you've got pretty strong views, obviously, with your dad being a trainer, open days in Malton, etc., are reasonably popular. And where do you stand on the racing on Good Friday issue?
I've no strong view for or against it, but I can sympathise with stable lads, empathise with stable lads and lasses and trainers and jockeys who, you know, getting very few days off throughout the year. And let's not forget, Good Friday is not a day off at the moment because horses still have to be worked in the morning and cared for during a morning and an evening. So it's a full day's work as it is for stable staff. Mm. And to put extra work on them on one of the few days of the year in which they have a relatively smoother ride than they might otherwise have seems to me to be quite an ask.
Yeah.
That said, I can see the argument for it. You know, we have so many other sporting events on a Good Friday now, be it football, rugby. Rugby league is popular on a Good Friday, and a host of other events. Mm. So, and they draw in big crowds because people are off work and therefore able to go racing. I think I heard you say last week if you were off on a Good Friday, you'd go racing if it was on. It was on. You know, I can see why people would want to go racing on a Good Friday. It's a contentious issue, and I'm sure whichever way the authorities come down on their decision, whether they decide to go ahead with it or scrap the idea, there will be a whole host of criticisms, and then people giving it their blessing and their backing. Mm. I see in the paper today, page 7 of the Racing Post, the NTF, the National Trainers Federation, are backing a nationwide open day idea, which I think is interesting. Of course, the five main centres as such are Newmarket, Epsom, Malton, Midland and Lambourne. Now, at the moment, we have the Midland and Lambourne open days on Good Friday, and they're very, very popular events. And it's been suggested that we might throw all the open days together and have it as one big sort of racing open day nationwide. And I can see why the idea has been mooted. That might be as popular a call as putting on good racing on a Good Friday. I think it would work in the main. Although I would tend to agree with what Tim Fitzgerald has said in the paper this morning. He's the chairman of the Malton Racing Association. He points out the fact that Malton and Midland are only an hour and a half apart, Alex, and it might dilute the crowds that either open day gets,
you
respectively.
You'd have to have staggered starts or something that would
I think it would be. I think it would be too much of a clash. The centres are too close, and they tend to attract the same audiences based on the people that I've met at the open days anyway, and the people that I've spoke to have been to open days. They tend to go to both because one is on Good Friday and one is on in August.
By the same token, you wouldn't have race meetings like that on the same time. You wouldn't have Ripon and Thirst gone next to each other, would you? It's the same sort of locality issue.
That's it, although it has been known to happen.
Well, I know, occasionally.
Yeah, from time to time, which smacks me as being crazy. But anyway, that's another issue. So many issues we could confront head on.
It is an issue that often in racing you'll get an issue where the majority of people are down one side or the other. This seems to have genuinely split the racing fraternity, doesn't it?
But the
racing on Good Friday.
Yes, massively. And the big selling point that the powers that be are trying to put out in front of trainers, owners, stable staff is that the idea that prize money on Good Friday would be so good that we'd almost want to race. But that was the same when Sunday racing was introduced, Alex.
Yeah.
When Sunday racing was brought in, there were a whole host of promises that we'd be racing for no less than X amount. Each runner would receive X amount appearance money. And over the years, the appearance money has dropped, the prize money has dropped, and in the end now, Sundays are much like any other day of the week in that we're racing for pittance and having to work as hard as ever, if not harder than ever, because training yards are so stretched on a weekend.
No, very true. An interesting debate, one that I'm sure will go on, but we need to move on. And we'll move on to some of Thursday's action at Doncaster, where I'm sure the prize money is certainly okay. We'll kick off with the 210. It's the Skepta Fillies Stakes, a Group 3 contest over 7 furlongs. 10 runners are down to go to post. Looks quite a nice race this, Sean, doesn't it?
It does. We've got good racing again on the Thursday of this Ledger Festival. As you'd expect, it's one of the premier meetings, certainly one of the North's premier meetings. I think the Ebor meeting is probably the North's flagship meeting, but Doncaster's St. Ledger meeting is right tucked in behind it, and I'm sure the officials at Doncaster would argue that it's on a par because York and their Ebor meeting do not offer a classic, whereas the Doncaster meeting offers the fifth and final classic of the year. So this is a huge, huge meeting. And a good day's racing on the Thursday, as you say. This 210 race is a 7 furlong race, a Group 3 restricted to fillies and mares. I often find it's a tricky race, Alex, for the simple reason the form that we've seen through the spring and the summer doesn't always tend to repeat itself and stack up come this time of year, because fillies who've had good form earlier in the season might just be starting to be on the way in a touch. And then there are fillies who have maybe been lightly raced through the summer and spring for a whole host of different reasons, whether the ground's been too quick, the fillies haven't quite come to themselves, or they've suffered minor setbacks, and they can come on and almost find improvement that you wouldn't expect them to find. I mean, last year's winner is a perfect case in point. Sunday Times was sent off 22-1 for the race last year, and there was no fluke about her win. She won in nice fashion for Peter Chappelheim. And that's one reason that I'm always cautious about getting too stuck into these fillies only races at this time of year. That said, though, we've got a good renewal for this race and a nice mixture of the older horses and the 3-year-olds. I do think this will go to a 3-year-old simply because, one, they outnumber the older horses, and two, they appear to be a classier type than the older horses in this race. We'll start with Maureen, who I question whether she'd train on this year, given how successful she was at 2 and how much she lacked in terms of scope. She's only a pocket-sized filly, really. But she has trained on, Alex, you'd have to say. She ran a cracker last time out as well when finishing mid-div in a Group 1 mile race in Deauville. That was a huge, huge run from her. The time before that, she was fourth at the Royal meeting. And she's held her form really, really well since winning the Guineas trial. I think it was the Fred Darling back at Newbury in April of this year. Richard Hughes is taking the rider board, Maureen, another positive, you'd have to say. And she is likely to be the favourite, or just about be favourite. She is at the moment with William Hill. Yeah. She's the 11-4 favourite at the moment, at the time of recording. And I can see why she's favourite. But I quite like the Ed McMahon filly in this race, Winning Express. A filly who, again, like Maureen, showed high-class form last year at 2. She was second in the Cheveley Park last year. Many people questioned whether she'd get a mile this year. She's only been tried at a mile once, and I don't think she truly got the mile, because she looked at one stage as if she was going to provide connections with a win in the 1,000 guineas before just running out of fuel inside the last half furlong or so. Connections have rightly dropped her back in trip subsequently. She was a winner at Warwick two starts back and then was a beaten favourite, but still finished second last time out at Goodwood at the Glorious Meeting behind Anecdote, another filly who she meets again in this race. Anecdote is a 5-1 shot at the moment with William Hill. Winning Express 3-1. Winning Express enjoys a £3 pull with Anecdote for that defeat at Goodwood. And I do think she'll reverse form with Johnny Portman's filly, although Anecdote has been a real credit to Connections this year and has taken them to the big meetings and has won for them at the big meetings. She was a winner, of course, at the Royal Meeting back in June and then a winner at Glorious Goodwood. So you couldn't ask much more of a filly hailing from such a relatively small stable. She must have been a real star for them this year, and I'm sure she's quite close to their hearts. But I think Winning Express will have the beating of her today. The Gold Cheongsam was fourth in that same said race. She likes it here, though. She was the winner of the sales race on this same day last year, over 6.5 furlongs. And, it's returned to the scene of certainly her most valuable triumph anyway, one of her biggest triumphs. That might spark about the required improvement to get her head in front of Anecdote and Winning Express this time. But it's going to have to take a return to this track to propel her in front of those rivals, because on what we've seen thus far this season, she's not as good as them. Mm. What else did I have on the shortlist? I thought it was really between them four, Alex.
Okay.
I think at the moment I'd be quite happy to lean towards Winning Express, although I certainly wouldn't be calling a banker material by any means, because as I said, this race has a habit of springing a surprise upon us punters.
Mm, certainly. Okay, then, Winning Express for Ed McMahon and Graham Lee, the pick in the 210. The 240 is the next race that we'll look at. It's the Weatherby's Hamilton Insurance 3,000 2-year-old stakes for 2-year-olds, 6.5 furlongs the trip. Just the 22 to go to push on, so I'm sure that you'll have an easy time picking the winner here. To be honest, I don't even know where to start. This could go to anyone, couldn't it?
Yeah, this is a really competitive renewal of this race, as you'd expect. It's the same every year. You get a whole host of these types of two-year-olds. I mean, the horses that fall just below the top bracket, and there are a number of them, tend to end up in these types of races. And then from time to time, we get one of the top performers to boot. What did I have? I had four on the shortlist again for this. There were Zarae, Ben Hall, Tanzeel, and Coolsty. We'll start with Coolsty, because I'd imagine this horse will be one of the favourites for this race, if not the outright favourite. He's one of four Richard Hannon contenders, and Richard Hughes takes the ride. And he was a very good second last time out at York in the valuable sales race behind Hike Bidiak. That was a good run from Coolsty, showing that he can mix it in these big fields. I think that's quite key. That's a big selling point for Coolsty. You know, the fact that he's managed to mix it in such a big field bodes well for his prospects here. He's held his form pretty well all year. The only disappointment came a second time up when he was beaten at Royal Ascot in the Norfolk, and well beaten. That said, though, it was only his second run. He was maybe lacking in experience a touch. He probably also found the five furlongs too sharp, Alex, because although he's by Kodiak, he's out of an in-the-wings mare, and he's found improved form since he stepped up in trip. And I think the 6.5 furlongs is probably going to prove just about perfect for Coolsty. So he gets onto the shortlist, as I say. Tanzeel. We know less about Tanzeel, but it's interesting that Paul Hannigan picks this horse. Charlie Hills trains Tanzeel, who was second in an Ascot maiden first time up, and then was the winner of a Newmarket maiden last time out in quite impressive fashion. This horse is bred to be pretty good. He's a half-brother to a few high-class performers, notably Hitchens, who's a group-class sprinter. On his day, and I think Tanzeel is worthy of respect, and it looks as if he's been kept for this race. He's been given 48 days off since that Newmarket maiden win, so Connections have probably eyed this race up, thought this is a perfect opportunity to land on a big pot, or certainly go close to landing on a big pot. And as I say, Paul Hannigan's chosen him over Zarae, which is a big shout, because I really like Zarae. He was a winner first time up at Haydock, was then beaten at Doncaster at even money. He was a favourite that day, and then was a winner last time out round Chester. I still think he's open to improvement, this son of Dubawi, And if we were to get a touch of rain, which wouldn't be impossible given how the skies look as we look out of the window here in Leeds, and the forecast, there are there is the possibility of showers anyway. I think that would suit him and certainly play to his strengths, because when he was beaten at Doncaster, the ground was firm. And I think that was probably what got him beat. But I do think there's more to come from William Haggas's colt. And the fourth horse that was on the shortlist is Ben Hall. Ben Hall is already a winner this season, won at Haydock on his second start. He finished seventh in the Windsor Castle at Royal Ascot, not beaten very far at all, and then was sixth last time out in group company at Glorious Goodwood. This is a touch easier for him, and he's the sort of horse that fits into that category I was mentioning, falling just below the top bracket, but therefore being able to be mightily competitive in these sorts of events. And Ben Hall, having just had the four runs to date, is also open to improvement. As I say, I've touched on four there. I've probably missed the winner. There are another 18 that I haven't mentioned. But I'd probably take two in this race. And the two I'd be taking would be Zarae, particularly if we get a little bit more rain over Doncaster. And I'll also go with Ben Hall, because I think there's a little bit more improvement to come from him.
Okay, then. Zari and Ben Hall against the field then in the 240. But as Sean said, that's fiercely competitive. The final race that we'll look at then is the 315. It's the Park Hill Stakes, a Fillies Group 2 contest over an extended mile and six. Ten runners down to go to posts, and we've got the Lark. It is quite a way clear on official ratings for this one, Sean, but I quite like seal of approval for the Fanshawe team.
Yeah, again, this isn't dissimilar to that 7 furlong fillies race that we've already touched on with regards to questioning how many of these fillies have had enough for the year, how many are just starting to hit top form at the moment. Seal of approval certainly can't be accused of being over-raced this year. She's only had two runs to date, one in July, one in August, so she comes here a very fresh filly. And I wouldn't disagree with you. I think she's got more to offer. She's only had the four starts to date, and she looks to be fast improving. And of course, her yard can do no wrong at the moment. In the last month or so, they've endured a real purple patch. And James Fanshawe and Hayley Turner teamed up to big race success at York on Sunday, when Hallelujah won the Phillies Sprint, and they've got strong claims of bagging another one here, this Group 2 event. I think this is a slightly below par renewal of the Park Hill Stakes as well, which certainly won't disappoint Seal of Approval's connections. Gives them an easier option than she might have had she been racing in recent seasons. The Lark is the favourite at the moment with William Hill, and probably deserves to be so on that Epsom Oaks third, two starts back. She was then disappointing at St. Cloud on soft ground subsequently. I don't think that she found the ground too soft that day either, to be honest, because her dam Gull Wing handled soft ground, and she by Pivotal, whose progeny like cutting the ground. She's also a winner at Doncaster. She broke her maiden tag here at the back end of last year on soft ground, so I don't think that can be used as an excuse. But she was just a little bit below par, and we've seen the Oaks form take a good few knocks, haven't we? The winner talent was beaten well and truly at the Curragh and in the Irish Oaks. The second Secret Gesture has been beaten in the German Oaks. So at the moment, it doesn't look like it was the strongest renewal of the Epsom Oaks. And for that reason, I wouldn't be taking the 7-4 about the Lark. If she wins at that, I'd be quite happy just to let her win. Jathabar is very, very consistent. Clive Britton's performer. She's held her form really well this season, and on the back of winning at Lingfield in April, has put in a number of placed efforts, most recently at York at the Ebor meeting. She'd have to be considered, as would Bite of the Cherry, who would be suited by a little bit of rain, and Alta Lilia is rock solid and would have a chance if being able to dominate from the head of affairs. But I'm like you, I'm a fan of this Seal of Approval. She couldn't hail from a yard in any better form, and I'll take her to turn over the Lark.
OK, then, Seal of Approval in the Park Hill Stakes. If you could sum up your three picks then at Doncaster on Thursday, please, Sean.
No problem. The second day of the Ledger meeting looks as tough as the first day. We started the podcast with the 210 race, the 7 furlong Group 3 Fillies and Mares Stakes, and I think the three-year-olds will dominate this. I'm going to go with Winning Express to turn over the her recent conqueror, Anecdote. Anecdote got the better of Winning Express at Glorious Goodwood, but hopefully Ed McMahon's filly with that £3 pull can reverse the placings. We then look at the Weatherby's Hamilton Insurance, £300,000 two-year-old stakes, and I'm going to take two against the field here. I like Zara E, William Haggis' horse, and Ben Hall, rather, John Gosden's charge. And in the 315, the Park Hill Stakes, I'm going to go with James Fanshawe's rapidly improving filly Seal of Approval to turn over the Oaks third, The Lark.
Brilliant, Sean. Good luck with those picks. Thank you very much for your time and enjoy all the action.
Thank you, sir.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.